Well, my name's April, and if you haven't gotten to meet me yet, I'm the youth pastor here, and I've been in student ministries for 2 years now, going on 3 years. And some people are kind of shocked when they hear that I absolutely love the role that I'm playing here at Church on the Ridge, that I enjoy being with middle schoolers all day, or I enjoy being with high schoolers. They don't understand it, and you know, sometimes I think it's so cool to know that God truly knows the desires of our hearts, and his plans and his ways are so much higher than our own, because I can be honest, I would have never pegged myself working with students, but I absolutely love it. And yes, middle school boys make constant farting noises all the time, and they do this annoying thing called water bottle flipping, and it's still going. It's not stopping. They do the dab and the floss, like all these weird dance moves. I would have never thought I would see young boys dancing from a video game, but now it's like they have no shame in sharing their dance moves. It's crazy. And girls, let me get started with the girls. They take endless selfies, and they have so much drama. Like, where does this drama come from? For any parents in the audience, let me just fill you in, make you a little relevant with today. They call this spill the tea. And that means they want to know what's going on. What's the drama? Spill the tea. Tell me what's going on. So you're welcome. Maybe you can casually put that in a conversation, see if you win any points. You know, your cool factor goes up. I don't know. But honestly, why I love this job so much is because every time I get to see these students take that next step in that discipleship path of discovering who Jesus is, it is such an honor that God would allow me to be on the front lines, in that front row of their life. When I see a student raise their hand for the first time in worship, I remember being a young person and thinking, what are my friends going to think of me? What are they going to say? What are they going to do? When they come to me and they say, April, I want to get baptized, which, by the way, we have a class on June 23rd for the youth if they want to get baptized. And when they invite their friends to church, when they're getting involved, we have a student impact team, which is just our student leadership. They run youth group on Thursdays. I don't know what I would do without them. They're so incredible. You've seen Sam up on the stage here, Caitlin on First Wednesdays, and it's so awesome to see them coming alive, walking out the talents and the gifts that God has given them, and truly, it is an honor to be a part of that. In just 2 weeks, we're having our student ministries move up. It's going to be on June 15th and 16th. So how many parents in the audience do I have of an incoming sixth grader? You've got a fifth grader right now. Yay! Are you ready? Are you ready to have a middle schooler? I mean, really, it's going to be the time of your life. You're about to embark on a new journey. It's going to be scary, but it's going to be fun. And student ministries, we want to partner with you as parents and families to make what that transition could be as intimidating and nerve-wracking. We want to make it smooth and easy. We want to make them feel comfortable, that they are invited. And so what we have is a catered event called Operation Force that's going to be June 14th and 15th. And this event is for your middle schooler to feel welcome, for them to see what the next 3 years of their life is going to look like, what it's going to hold for their future. They're going to sit around a bonfire. We're going to sing worship songs, and they'll get to hear from eighth graders sharing what they've learned. And we're also going to be really silly and, you know, dress up in all the camouflage and go play laser tag and get really dirty and do weird things because that's what youth like to do. But it's going to be a really fun event. So if you haven't signed up your middle schooler for that event, go ahead and do so. And I know summer is really hectic and there's lots of plans and vacations. Everyone's going. But really, this is the time to get your middle school, to get your high schooler involved in what we're doing in student ministries, what we're doing here at youth group. We're going to have youth group every Thursday here. We're going to have camp, and it's going to be July 11th through 15th. And I absolutely love the experiences that we get to have at camp. It's like no other. It's 4 days away from all the distractions, no screen time, and they get to hear from God. They get to have relationships with their leaders, and it's such sweet time because we only get so much time with these students. They're all over the place, so it's really cool to dive deeper with friendships and with those leaders, and importantly, that relationship with God. Camp had a special impact on my life. It was when I went that I experienced who God really was. I always knew who he was, but he became personal to my life. And it's when I confessed some of the deepest, darkest sins that I had ever had faced in my life. And it's when Jesus called me into full-time ministry. And I didn't know what that looked like at that age. I would have never imagined myself up on a stage in front of people. But I love that God called me in the midst of my brokenness, in the midst of the troubles and the chaos, when I didn't have anything quite figured out about who I was or what I was doing. And that's what God does. He doesn't go for the qualified or the ones that have it all together. He goes for the ones that are simply willing, the ones that are saying, "Here I am, God, use me." So when I get to be up here today, guys, it's special to me, not because of anything I could do or any skill set that I have, but because I know that it has nothing to do with anything I've accomplished, but that Jesus has been faithful to that word that he spoke into my life back then, that he spoke it when I didn't even see it, and now here I am, and it's his faithfulness. So I don't know if God's ever spoken something to your heart, but he wants to see that through. He has promises set for your life, and if you trust him, if you walk that out, you'll see it. So it's special today, but it's really special because my dad's here. Dad, just wave your hand. My dad flew here all the way from Texas. It's pretty cool. We'll see if it's worth it by the end of this. So I don't know. Hang tight for that. So I grew up with some incredible parents. Honestly, I can't even express how much gratitude I have for them, but they told me that they were very blessed to have a child like me. And I feel like everyone should just feel blessed when they're in the presence of me. I mean, I feel like I'm pretty awesome. So, but the reason that they would say I was a blessing in their life is because I was the child that would put myself to sleep. You know, if you're a parent out there and you have the struggles of fighting with your kids, you're like making negotiations with a 4 or 5 year old, you're like, what am I doing? Trying to get them to go to bed, you're like burning calories, you're having to like recommit your life to Jesus, and it's hard. There's some battles there. And maybe you're like, no, my kid's perfect, but let's be honest, we're at church. My parents would just sit back and relax as I would come to them as a 4 year old and say, you know, Mom and Dad, it's been a good day, but it's time for me to retire for the night. We've got a busy day tomorrow. And they were like, oh my gosh, you are so good. What did we do to deserve such a blessing? And so I grew up thinking that it was a blessing to be a kid that went to bed early until I went to my very first sleepover. I don't know if you've ever been to a sleepover. I don't know really why we call them sleepovers, because guess what? There's no such thing as sleep at a sleepover. So what I thought was a blessing, I discovered was a curse, because as a kid with many whipped creams to the face, getting embarrassing photos and pictures, what I look back at as torture as a child, I decided my parents are liars. They lied to me. They didn't tell me the truth. And I don't know if you've ever received like mixed messages from your parents or people in your life, because my parents would tell me at one moment it was a blessing that I would go to bed early. It was a good thing until I had a guest over, and we're from Texas, so manners is a really big deal, being polite. And when you're a host, it's really important that you receive them well and treat them with kindness. And so anytime I went to bed before my guest, they would like lay into me of like, April, you can't fall asleep before your guest. You have to be there to, you know, see if they need anything. And I was like, is it a blessing? Is it a curse? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? So as you can tell, I had a very traumatic childhood experience. So yeah, just pray for me when you think of that. And I thought this would be something that I would just grow out of, that one day, you know, I'm just going to go off to college. I'm going to have the time of my life staying up past 9 p.m., Didn't happen. I had the time of my life when I was in bed by 9:30. If I was feeling really rebellious, 10 p.m. And it was great until I decided that I wanted to be a chaplain. And I decided to be a chaplain my sophomore year. And basically what this meant was that I was going to get the opportunity to pastor 32 girls on my floor. Just going to let that settle in. 32 girls. That's a lot of drama. That's a lot of girls. I think it's what God used to prepare me for even just the thought of going into youth ministry. And God really humbled me in those times. And what I really struggled with is on this contract that we had assigned, it had this part that said, you are to make yourself available at any time. Well, I, you know, looked at that a couple of times, and I was like, maybe it's like any time before 9 p.m., you know? Like, these girls are going to get to know me. They're going to understand that, man, April likes her sleep. They're going to respect that. What time did they come knocking on my door? 9 p.m., or if I was really lucky, later than that. So I got very strategic of how I entered into my room. So I would like come in on the hallway, kind of look left or right. I'd run down the hallway, shut the door, lock the door, turn off all the lights. Seattle freeze, you've done it before. You've had a long day at work. You don't want to talk to that neighbor that's just going to talk. So you're like, let me just whip out the phone. I'm on a really serious phone call. Can't talk. Shut the door. Everything's good. Right? And that's what I would do because I learned that these girls felt really comfortable with me. What I would consider too comfortable because they wouldn't just knock. They just started barging in. Sometimes I'd come back to my room and they were already there waiting for me. That's creepy. I was like, no one taught you manners. Like, we learn to knock on our door before we come in. You don't just, I don't know if you've ever had a guest that all of a sudden is going into your fridge, making themselves a meal. And it's like, I don't know. People are like, April, you should appreciate that. They feel comfortable around you. I'm like, that's too Christian for me. I want them to ask. I just think that's polite, you know? So I had to, you know, do some things to protect myself. I think it's why I'm such a jumpy person, because I would be at sleep in my bed at peace. Thank you, God, for this amazing day. And then shaking the door, rattling. I'm like, hide your kids, hide your wives. They're coming. You know, this is scary, you know. But really, I chose my convenience over stepping into the participation of what God was asking me or inviting me into. I chose my sleep, what I put as most important, rather than opening that door when I felt like it was an interruption, it was inconvenient. I justified that time because I had already met with maybe 3 girls that day. I had already had all my classes. I had a busy schedule the next day. I was babysitting. It was all over the place. So I felt like it was fair, but really, I was missing out on the kingdom work that God was calling and inviting me into. And how many times do we find ourselves doing that same thing, where God has called us to be full participants of this game, of bringing the heavens to the earth, to experience the miracles and the glories that he has for us, to walk in our purpose, but we end up choosing to be on the sideline because we feel like, well, I don't have the energy, I don't have the resource, I don't have the availability, I don't have that in me, I'm exhausted. Or we are saying, well, I'm in the game, I've got the jersey on to represent, but I'm not fully in. You know, Jesus is looking for people that have the marks, the bruises, the dirt. He wants to see, where have they fought? Where have they been in the game, fully giving all that they have, rather than choosing what's convenient for their lives at that time? And every time that I open that door after 9 p.m., which took me a while to finally get to that point of doing it, when I would choose to put myself last and to put these other people before me, when I would stop looking at it as an interruption but an invitation for more, I saw God meet me in those moments, seeing girls confess things that they had never even talked about before. I remember one night sitting in this room, a complete silence for 2.5 hours, as this girl just tried to work up the courage to speak something out loud that she had never told anyone before. Man, those were the moments where I was like, this is an honor to be a part of, God, that you would invite me into this. And it wasn't a moment of me saying, okay, it's been 1.5 hours, I need you to hurry this up, I've got a lot of things to do. But it was saying, hey, God, you know what? I want to be a full participant in the game you have for my life. I want to walk out this purpose. I'm going to trust you that you're going to work out all the things that need to get done after this. And every time that I yielded myself to him, he gave me the energy I needed. I didn't go to bed and wake up completely exhausted the next day. I was full. I was overflowing. I was satisfied. In church, that's my desire for us, that we would be full participants in the game, the kingdom of heaven that he has called us to play a part in, that we wouldn't sideline ourselves, that we wouldn't just wear the jersey and say, yeah, I'm a Christian, but not fully get it. And Jesus saw the same tendency in his disciples. Disciples are really incredible, but they were human. They had their moments, and they struggled with this concept of, yeah, I'm going to be fully in the game as long as it matches up with my schedule, as long as it fits in and goes according to plan. And if we're honest, we're going to learn that there's never this perfect time to get in the game. It's never going to feel super convenient. So as you're waiting for that to happen, you're just missing more days to be in participation of what God's called you to be. So in Mark chapter 6, we're going to see how Jesus addressed the disciples of what it means to be full participants in the game. says the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. This is exciting stuff. They're going out into their community to North Bend, Falls City, Snoqualmie, Issaquah, and they are inviting their friends to church. They're coming. They're seeing marriages restored. They're seeing sickness be healed. They're seeing their kids who are far off from Jesus come back home. The community is growing. It's getting stronger. Jesus is being made known. And they're like, man, to be a participant in the game, it's pretty fun. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. And that is the message that we would love to talk about. Where men, you can go play golf for as long as you want. You don't have to feel guilty about it. Women, you can go to the spa. Kids, you can have unlimited screen time. School's out. It's time, vacation all the time. But Jesus isn't giving us a message on rest. He's calling us into participation with him. So it says they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. They were interrupted. It's Monday night. Bachelorette's on. Friends calling you. You're like, oh, it's that friend that just wants to nag about everything in their life. Decline. Okay? It's you've been faithful at your job. You just worked a long shift, and now your boss is calling you saying, hey, the next guy, he didn't show up. He didn't come in. Can you come back in? Seriously? Like, I just got off. Church on the Ridge is calling you. We need 4th of July volunteers. We need breakaway volunteers. We need summer camp drivers. I think about 4 or 5. It's July 11th through 15th, if you just want to pencil that in. And you're like, I've already done my volunteer work. I've already checked off my Christianity. I'm good to go. I'm serving. I don't need to do anymore. We can be honest and say, it's hard. It's kind of frustrating. It doesn't always feel very good when the plans aren't going the way you thought. When it's your rest day, your time to just put whatever is important to you, and then you get that call, you get that interruption. So Jesus saw the crowd, and he said, go away. This is my day. This is my day off to myself. It's my day to treat myself. No, obviously it's Jesus. He's perfect. He was like, he had compassion on them. He said they were like sheep without a shepherd, so he began teaching them many things. By this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him, and they said, hey, Jesus, this is a remote place. That, you know, all the Starbucks, the 3 that we have, they're all shutting down. Mod Pizza shutting down. Safeway's closing. These people are tired. They're hungry. Like, we need to send them home so they get stuff to eat, so they get rejuvenated for the next day. And what I love about Jesus is that he knows our heart. And sometimes it's really frustrating that he knows our heart. Where it's awesome is when you're struggling with sin or you're trying to overcome an addiction or something difficult in your life, practicing forgiving someone, and he sees, man, this person's not just struggling, they're struggling well. He sees our hearts and our effort, but where it's frustrating is when he knows when you're not really communicating what you're trying to communicate, that the disciples weren't really speaking on behalf of the people, they were speaking on behalf of themselves. Man, the crowd, they wanted to be in the presence of Jesus. They were in the best spot they wanted to be, but the disciples, man, they're hungry. They're tired. How many times do we suggest things that everyone else is feeling this, but really no one else is feeling that? It's just you. And I really struggled with that at Church on the Ridge when I discovered we didn't have one gathering or 2 gatherings, but 3 gatherings. I was like, really? You know, how cool would it be if we all packed in for 1 gathering? Yeah, it'd be a little tight. You know, we'd get really close and you'd really get to smell people. It'd be really fun. We could sing Kumbaya together. It'd be like a tight community. And Pastor Charlie would be so awesome on the stage. You'd have like so much excitement because you're seeing like this huge audience packed out. But really, it was coming from a selfish place of I'm young and I want my weekend, right? I want to be able to have time for myself. And that's exactly what the disciples were trying to communicate. It was, hey, we're tired, we're hungry, so send the crowd away. And I love how Jesus responds because he says, you know what, disciples? That's a really great point. I'm so glad that you're thinking of others and seeing the needs of others. You're right, they're hungry, they're tired. So you know what? Why don't you give them something to eat? I don't know how I just communicated this where now he's saying I should do it because really I just wanted to complain. Really, I just wanted to put it on someone else's plate to do all the hard work. I just wanted to make a suggestion. Now you walk it through, you make it happen. But Jesus doesn't want us to be that annoying fan in the audience that's like, man, the coach is calling all the wrong calls. The players aren't playing hard enough. No one likes that guy. He's annoying, right? And so he doesn't want us to be that person. He wants us to be in the game, a full participant, where we're not just suggesting or giving these ideas or opinions, but that we're saying, hey, they need to get some food, so how can we feed them? How can we make this happen right now? I see this problem occurring. I see we're going in this direction. I think it would be better here. How can I be a part and get in the game to make that happen? But the disciples were like, dude, this is a large crowd you're asking us to go out in and try to feed. There's 5,000 people. We can't feed all these people. We're tired. We're exhausted. We don't have the resources. Are we supposed to go and sell all this bread to make all this money to try to attempt to feed these people? And how many times do we come up with all these excuses and all these reasons to say, I'm not qualified. I can't do this thing that you're asking me to do. I don't have enough money to make it happen. I don't have the energy. If you only knew my schedule. And what's crazy is the crowd wasn't just 5,000 people that day. Theologians say that they didn't count the women or children. So if you were to count everyone, there's 15 to 20,000 people. So just imagine this. The disciples are going out into the crowd and they're like, hey, Gavin, I don't know. Did you maybe happen to pack a lunch for, say, 15, 20,000 people? No, yeah, that's stupid. I don't even know why I asked that. Ray, do you have any, like, Lunchables, you know, where we can just, like, break it off into pieces? 13,000? No? Okay. So they're going out through all the crowd, and they're trying to see anyone pack, like, a big, big lunch. You are really hungry today. And when they go through the entire crowd, they find one little boy who is willing to offer what he had. He's like, I don't have enough to feed 15 to 20,000 people, but I do have 5 loaves and 2 fish. I don't know if it's going to be enough. I don't know if I have the abilities. I don't know if I have the talent. I don't even know if I have the money to make this happen, but I see the need, and this is what I have. And man, that's exactly what Jesus was looking for. Saying, I'm not making the disciples go and make this all happen, because even on our best days, all we're going to show up with is 5 loaves and 2 fish. Saying, you can't do anything apart from me, but I'm asking, what do you have? What can you give? Out of 15 to 20,000 people, you're telling me that only one boy packed a lunch that day? No. It's the only one willing to give the little he had. What could it have looked like if everyone would have given the little that they had? What could that have brought all together in that moment? And I love that it was a little boy, because he wouldn't have been counted in the crowd that day. He would have been overlooked, disqualified, not seen as important, not seen as someone that would have the ability to do anything that day. And that's exactly how I felt when I stepped into ministry. I was 22 when I got started. And I remember going through trying to apply for all these ministry jobs. And you know, the requirements, the prerequisites that they would ask of me is for me to be male, for me to be married, or for me to have more experience. Well, that's funny. How am I supposed to get experience if no one's willing to give me experience, right? Had this 6-month internship. I thought that maybe that would look like experience. And so I felt like, well, why don't you just put it on my resume? I'm qualified. And I felt like there was nothing that I had to give. It doesn't matter what I try. But Jesus was saying, April, I'm not asking for you to do everything. I'm just saying, give to me what you have. So when I came working here at Church on the Ridge, and as I continue to work here, man, there are still challenges. There are still moments where I want to disqualify myself, where I don't see myself fully the way God sees myself, where I don't want to get out of bed in the morning because I feel so discouraged. How am I supposed to lead 100 plus students to know Jesus? How am I supposed to build up this ministry, get parents on board, get leaders developing in their relationship with Jesus? Who am I? Who am I to meet this big need? All I have are 5 loaves and 2 fish. And Jesus saying, that's all I need. That's all I need. So many of us disqualify ourselves because we see the big picture and then we see the little we have and we justify it and say it's nothing. But Jesus saying, give me the little you have and watch me multiply it. Watch me use it. That it's not about you, but it's about me. I want you to be in participation of the game. Jesus could have performed that miracle in that moment easily. But he didn't want to be the local Walmart or Target or Safeway or Fred Meyer where you can just come and get what you want. He limited his power so that the disciples could feel empowered so they could be a part of what he was going to do that day. So the disciples come back and they're like, hey, Jesus, we've got 5 loaves and 2 fish. I told you so. I told you this was ridiculous. You know, there's all these people out here. This is all we have. And I love that Jesus didn't look at the fish and the loaves and say, seriously? This is all you've got? This is all you were able to bring? This is all you could offer? No, he looked at it and he took it in his hands and he blessed it. He said, God, thank you for the little we have. Thank you that this is more than enough. And he broke it. And he gave the disciples little pieces of fish, little pieces of bread. They didn't see the miracle. They didn't see enough to feed the 15 to 20,000 people in that moment. And the disciples had to take it and just start distributing it to the crowd. How ridiculous would you feel? Here's a little piece of bread. Here's a little fish bone for you. I don't know. And as they walked it out in faith, then did the miracle begin. Then did they say, and it did they see the miracle. And they said that everyone was fed that day, not just fed, but satisfied. There was enough for each of the disciples, 12 of them, to walk away with a basket full of leftovers. Because when we choose to be participants in the game, when we say, I'm all in, God, you have every access to every part of who I am. He doesn't give us just a little bit. He doesn't give us just what we're asking for, but he goes above and beyond and shows us what's truly important. And I believe that this is what God wants to see in your life. It's what he wants us to see at our church, is what it means to have a miracle take place in our life. Miracles don't just happen in what we read in the Bible. They still take place today. Big miracles. I'm talking about sick people being made healed. Marriages that seem like they're on the edge of divorce. It's not going to turn back, come back to life. I wasn't alive to see it happen, but my parents were divorced. It was over. It was done. But they gave to God the little that they had, and he multiplied it and he restored it. Where I got to grow up in a home where people who didn't know Jesus, now it's the only thing they knew. It happens today, but it asks of us, will you be a full participant in the game? Will you give all that you have? Will you trust me? So in order to be a full participant, there's two things required. And the first is this. You have to be willing to give thanks to God. Thanks to God. So many times we complain about the things that we don't have, the lack of abilities or resources, but he's saying, will you begin to thank me for the little you have? Will you begin to not look at your little as nothing, but see it for what it really was? I believe that Jesus waited for the disciples to be so exhausted, emotionally drained, spiritually drained, because they've been pouring out to people all day long. They were tired, they were hungry, and I believe he waited for that state to call them to more, because he wanted them to know that even on their best days, they were going to need him, that in their weaknesses, he's made strong, that it has nothing to do about them, has nothing to do with us, but everything to do with him. And he wanted them to be in a place where they would always remember, man, Jesus is all that I need. Jesus will give me everything that is required, thanking him, recognizing that you are enough, church. I don't know where you struggle. I don't know where you have insecurities or you disqualify yourself. I mean, I don't know how to speak to people. I don't know how to interact. I don't know how to engage in this way. I don't know how to trust in this way. God has given you everything that you need. It's right in front of you. The means for that miracle that day were already in front of them. The means that you need for that miracle in your life are already in your lap. It's already there, but you're just overlooking it because you're thinking it's nothing. Begin to thank him for the areas you struggle in, for the areas that you think are nothing. And the second thing is this, probably the hardest part, is trusting in God. Believing God is who he says he is and will do what he says he'll do. And the disciples had to trust as they handed out those little pieces. They didn't know, is this really going to work? Is this really going to happen? Are we just going to look really silly as we run short and don't have enough? But they saw the miracle happen that day. They saw Jesus do the impossible, that he really was who he says he was. And for us in our lives, there may be areas where you're like, I don't even know, but I'm just going to keep going. I'm going to trust that in faith, as I give this to you, as I constantly come before you, I don't know how this is going to work in my finances. I don't know how this is going to work in my marriage, with my student's life, in my child's life, in these areas at work. But I'm going to keep giving. I'm going to keep trusting. I'm going to believe that as I choose to be in the game, God, you're with me, that I need to be connected to you. So church, we have to give thanks to God and we have to trust him. If you want to see a miracle take place in your life, if you want to see God do the impossible in your life, it's going to require you to come before him and say, here I am. And I don't have everything, but I have this. And I'm willing to be inconvenienced. I'm willing to be interrupted. Don't look at it as an interruption or inconvenience. It's an invitation. What an honor to be invited by God into the work of his kingdom. What an honor to get to talk with someone and lead them to Jesus. What an honor to encourage someone to stop what you're doing, to see what's most important, to stand before God and him to say to you, you've been faithful. Man, you've done the good work. I see the marks. I see the sweat and the tears and the bruises. But the reward is so much greater. It's more than what you could ever imagine. What you think is important, the things in this world, they're going to be fleeting. What you spend your time with, what you think is so valuable and important now, one day when you stand before God, you're going to realize that none of those things matter. That what's most important is the kingdom work, being in full participation with him. So church, what's the 5 loaves and the 2 fish that you're holding on to right now? What's the little that you're holding on to, afraid to give it to God, afraid to use it, afraid it won't be enough, afraid it's going to be stupid or you're going to look a little silly? What's that thing that you can present to him? Would you pray with me? God, thank you so much that you are a God that limits your power to work through us, where we are really no one. There's nothing special about us. But God, you come and live in our life and you make us special. You work through us. You allow us to be in participation with you. There is a game that we are playing, and God, it can be tiring. It can feel exhausting. But I pray that you would encourage the people in this room to know you have given them all that they need. When we pray for, God, we need more of you. We need you to show up in this way. You're saying, I am there. I have given you those things. So would we stop looking over and glancing over those things that you've given us and begin to see it fully for what it is. God, show us the areas in our life that we've closed off to you. Show us the areas that we're not allowing you to awaken and to use, the areas that we disqualify ourselves and say we're not enough because those are lies from the enemy. And God, we choose to believe that you are who you say you are and you're going to use us in powerful ways. So God, we yield ourselves to you. We are waiting and looking forward to that invitation of stepping into the game that you've called us to play. God, thank you for what you're doing, and I ask that you continue to move in the hearts of all of us. In your name we pray, amen.